And we're talking with the survivalist, James Wesley Rawls, his website, survivalblog.com. This entire hour, we will take your phone calls with him. By the looks of things, the lines are almost all jammed. We'll be back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast to Coast. James, as we look at over the next 4 months, as we get through election period here, what do you think is going to happen in terms of the economy?
Well, it's very difficult to predict, but I think that if the powers that be want to crash the economy, they could do so very easily. If they want to try to perpetuate the false prosperity, they might be able to pull it off. But unfortunately, I don't have a crystal ball. All I can say is people need to prepare. They need to be ready regardless of when this happens, because it's certainly going to happen within the next few years.
And if for some reason it doesn't happen, they're still not out of luck. I mean, they've got supplies that they can use.
Right. It's like money in the bank. And when inflation does return, people will really appreciate having squared away that food storage, for example, when the costs were relatively low. This last summer, we've seen the price of corn more than double. And for anyone that had cornmeal squared away or any other grain squared away, because it's also driven the price of all the other staple
commodities
up, sure. Like wheat and even rice have gone up correspondingly. Anyone who had their food storage in bulk squared away early is sitting pretty. It literally is better than money in the bank.
Well, that's true. Absolutely. What do you think about gold investing, putting it aside? We recommend it. What do you think?
I do, after you have your other key logistics squared away.
Your essentials.
You got to get the essentials squared away. The beans, bullets, and Band-Aids have to have the priority. And then following that, I think silver is actually the better investment right now, because it's better for barter in a disaster situation. And it's also more likely to double than gold at this point.
Well, that's true, too. What about other nations? What happens to them?
Well, that's what I tried to show in my novel, Survivors, for example, and in my upcoming novel, Founders. I talk about that as well. That novel's coming out on the 25th of September.
Okay, great.
Overseas, we could see just as much calamity as here in the States. Now, some third world countries are quite accustomed to long-term power failures and to a more of a subsistence level of agriculture, more of a subsistence level economy. And their life might be able to carry on without too much degradation. You know, the old saying is it's awfully easy to get along with what you've never had. And in some third world countries, that'll be the case. In Europe, however, in Australia, in much of Asia, where you have fairly high concentrations of population in the major cities, things are going to be just as bad in the States as in the States, if not worse.
Okay, let's take some calls here. Let's go, first of all, to Oceanside, California, west of the Rockies. Jack's with us. Jack, thanks for calling.
Yeah, you know, I read an interesting book back in 1962 during the Cuban Missile Crisis. The title was A Last Babylon. Mm-hmm. It was written in 1959 by Pat Frank, and it dealt with a small town in Florida that had to survive after a nuclear exchange between Russia and the United States. Mm-hmm. And you mentioned barter. In a prolonged period of collapse, you're not going to have access to our electronic money, and money or even silver may not have much value. In this book, the things that had value were things of necessity, like food, water, a gallon of gasoline, a bottle of whiskey, ammunition. And I was wondering if you've given much thought in your survival guide to what things we might have on hand in form of barter that would have value during a crisis.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's, in fact, at my website, if you click in the left-hand column, there's a link titled List of Lists. And one of the lists on there is a barter inventory list. And I go through a number of items that I think would be ideal barter currency. Things like common caliber ammunition is right near the top of my list. because not only is it something that will be in great demand, but it's also something that's easily divisible. You can take a 50-round box of 22 long rifle cartridges and break that into a whole bunch of little transactions. So it makes an ideal barter item. Common caliber ammunition has got to be, again, at the top of the list. Other good items.
How much is too much?
Oh, there's no such thing as too much ammunition, because it's one of those barter items that you can trade for just about anything. Another really good item would be 1 gallon containers of kerosene, extra wick, wicking for kerosene lamps is another really good item. And another one that's often overlooked by people is two-cycle mixing oil for two-cycle engines, such as those used on chainsaws. If everyone's going to be cutting their own firewood, we may have a situation where they can find gasoline and barter for gasoline, but they may not find two-cycle oil to mix that gasoline.
That's so a good point.
Small bottles of two-cycle oil will be like gold.
Let's go to our Skype line. Nope, not ready yet. Let's go to Rick in Kansas City, Missouri. Rick, welcome to the show.
Wow. Hello, George. This is really a wonderful treat.
Super.
Oh, God, I've been listening for a while, tried to get through, and this is the first time I've been able to get through. And it's just a wonderful topic to listen to. And what I wanted to talk to or ask Mr. Rawls about, are you familiar with Howard Ruff and his predictions from the early 1980s?
Yeah, he was definitely premature in his predictions, because
way ahead of the game.
At a national debt of $1 trillion as being absolutely unsustainable. He thought once we hit the $1 trillion national debt level, that we would collapse. And now, of course, if you look at the both the official debt and the unfunded liabilities that stretch out with all the pensions, we're looking at $160 trillion of liabilities, and the system has still not collapsed. Howard Ruff is or was a really prescient individual, and I have a lot of respect for his writings, but he was just way ahead of his time.
Okay, well, that's what I wanted to ask, because I read his book, I responded, and, you know, did some purchasing, kind of did some of the suggestions you're talking about now.
It's got a good newsletter, Rough Times, I think.
Yes, exactly, Rough Times, How to Prosper in the Coming Bad Years. And, you know, I did those things, and then gradually, as I saw nothing was happening, I kind of felt it foolish, and I felt that they cheated. So here we are 30 years later, and listening to you in a very similar kind of fashion. What's changed, and why should I consider your predictions more credible than Mr. Ruff's? You know, do you see the predicament I'm in?
Well, the most important change is that we now live in a much more fragile society. We live in a society where the economy is all based on electronic transactions, and where the chains of supply are tremendously long. All the parts that go in your car, or even just, you know, the average piece of consumer electronics, come from literally all over the world. The chains of supply are tremendously long. The interdependency between systems is much, much greater. And the level of technology that exists has, just on its own, made us more vulnerable to things like EMP and solar flares, because microcircuit gate dimensions have gotten smaller and smaller and smaller. 15 years ago, a typical gate dimension on a microcircuit was 3 or 4 microns. Well, 10 years ago, they went submicron, and now they're down to about 1/3 of a micron. And the smaller the gate dimensions are, the more vulnerable a chip is to even just static electricity, but much more vulnerable to EMP or solar flares. So the level of complexity, the technological sophistication of our society has made us much, much more vulnerable. 30 years ago, if we had an economic collapse, a lot of stores would have been able to keep on doing business, switching over to cash transactions.
They can't do that now.
They can't do that now, because they literally cannot run their cash registers without power. And if you look at the architecture of modern stores, most stores are built with tilt-up slab architecture that are essentially windowless. So without electricity, they're going to be without light, without power, without air conditioning. They'll be dark, cold caves. There won't be any, or depending on the climate, dark, hot caves. There won't be any way to transact business.
Well, you know, they don't even, some of them don't even know how to subtract if you give them a $20 bill. They can't give you change.
They can't make change. That's right.
They don't know. Now, what about your job? What happens to your job if we have a problem? A grid goes down or something.
Well,
I can tell you not to show up or what?
Well, I think a lot of people will not show up, and that includes a lot of people who are in public service. Firemen, EMTs, paramedics, police officers. If the situation is truly worst case, a lot of those people are going to be more concerned about the safety of their own families, and they're going to want to stay home and protect them rather than show up for work. Another whole category of people who won't be showing up are people who work for utilities like water districts and for power companies and phone companies. So if we have any major disruption, they may not have the manpower to get the system back up.
Okay, back to the call. Skype line, Joplin, Missouri. Mike, take it away. Go ahead, Mike.
Hi, Mr. Norrie. Hi, Mr. Rolls.
Hi.
Hi, go ahead.
Mr. Rolls, I heard you on the show tonight, and I wanted to call in and thank you because you put me on the path and I needed to be on to, you know, started putting back some food, gold, silver, ammunition, things that I might need. And, you know, my wife and I, we both were laid off and lost our jobs without our food storage. You know, my wife remarked just the other day, we wouldn't have made it through. We're both stable now, and we're back in our professions, and we're working.
Good.
But, you know, she mentioned, without that food storage, we wouldn't have made it.
That's critical.
Congratulations. You're living proof that a well-rounded food storage program is the best insurance you can buy.
If, for some reason, certain regions of the country go down, but let's say Russia does not or China does not, do you anticipate some kind of an attack?
Well,
what a way to beat somebody,
right? If you look at economic turmoil, it does tend to lead toward major conflicts between countries. And, you know, if you stop making the payments on your car, they come and tow your car away.
That's right.
Well, if a government goes bankrupt, what are you going to call it? Kingdom towing? But that's essentially what wars are.
They figure the collateral is us.
Yeah. Well, in our case, it'll be not so much the people, but the people's labor. And I would also predict that if we had a major economic collapse and we defaulted on major debt overseas, that one of the ways they'd like to try to recoup their losses would be to literally crate up entire factories and ship them overseas. That's what happened at the end of World War II when the Soviet Union took over Eastern Europe. They took the best and brightest engineers and the most productive industries and crated them up and shipped them back to Mother Russia.
Well, they sure did. Let's go to Nehalem, Oregon. Nancy's with us on Coast to Coast on the Wild Card line. Hey, Nancy, go ahead. You with us? Yeah, let's hold on. She will be if I hit the right line. Hi, Nance.
Hi, great show tonight. Really appreciate the timing is immaculate. Hey, I had a question for Mr. Rawls. I'm in a coastal community, mm-hmm. and everybody around here hunts, so ammunition isn't something that you know, people are looking for, I think even in a dearth of it. But I'm looking for something that would be durable and small and easy to use for barter when we're in a coastal community, a farming community, we need fresh foods, and I don't want something that people are going to start targeting us on for having accumulated a lot of. It needs to be something fairly low profile. Anything besides ammo, and if we have an EMP attack, of course, the machines aren't going to work, but any other ideas?
Well, if you were in an inland area, I would say salt, but being in a coastal area, salt won't be an issue. You can always... In a tide pool, you can, you know,
scoop it out of the water, let it dry out.
Yeah, you let it dry out, and or put it on sticks is what the Indians used to do. Is they'd put a whole bunch of reeds around a tide pool and have the salt accumulate. There's a number of other things you can do, but you'll be surprised, even in an area where everyone hunts, that your average hunter is basically a one box of cartridge a year kind of guy. So if everything hits the fan, suddenly they're not going to want just one box of ammunition. They're going to want a lot.
That's
because
right.
They're going to be thinking in terms of self-defense, not hunting. So ammunition will, even there, will be worth a lot in barter. The other things that you can salt away, at least in reasonable quantities, would be batteries. But you have to look at shelf life on those. But rechargeable batteries, a lot of those, especially the nickel metal hydride, the NIMH batteries, would be an excellent thing to salt away.
And, you know, a pack of batteries will last you, what, at least a year if you just use it in the, keep it in the carton?
Oh, well, a lot of them, if you look at the expiration dates on Duracells and Energizer batteries, a lot of those will have expiration dates around 2018, 2019.
Oh, they last that long. Super.
Yeah, a lot of them are designed to have a fairly long shelf life. Another thing that you might want to put away, if you're putting away rechargeable batteries, would be small solar chargers. Those will be in great demand, yes.
Our dear friend C. Crane, they sell a solar observer radio with a solar panel. I mean, it runs on a hand crank, but you just put it out there and it powers itself up with a solar panel. That's pretty novel.
Yeah, if someone were sitting on a half a dozen of those, they could certainly name their price, because people are going to be desperate for information. And if the power grid's down and they run out of gas for their cars, they won't even have their car radios available. The car batteries will go dead.
Let's go to Jack in Minnesota, wildcard line. Hey, Jack, go ahead.
Hey, George, how you doing?
Good, Jack.
Mr. Rawls, it's a pleasure to speak with you. As an old fart, I'm curious. You talk about substantial foods. Well, I don't have a lot of money available. I'm on Social Security. I understand the ammunition thing in regards to barter, along with other things. And I am just old enough to be creative that I don't worry about the barter end, but it's the chow.
You can get affordable food now, storable. Of course, you know, we've got Wise food storage, but it's out there if you look, isn't it, James?
Right, and you can literally buy food out of the field and do home canning. You can buy things like peas and lentils in bulk and salt them away yourself. You can buy 5-gallon food-grade buckets, or you can even get them free if you ask around. Go to bakeries and delicatessens, ask if they have any extra 5-gallon buckets. And you can store foods in bulk at incredibly low prices.
You sure can. Stay with us. We're going to come back and take final phone calls with you, James, right here on Coast to Coast AM. James' website, of course, linked up at coasttocoastam.com. Those of you who are very interested in survival, go and get some great information there, and we shall be right back with more calls. Well, next hour, we will talk about subconscious potentials. Get ready for that. And when we come back with James Wesley Rawls, we'll take final phone calls right here on Coast to Coast AM as we talk about survival. And welcome back to Coast to Coast. I'm George Norrie, of course, and our guest, James Wesley Rawls, and your phone calls as well. How did you get involved in this, James?
Well, I kind of grew up in the preparedness mindset. I came from a pioneer family that came out west by covered wagon in the 1850s. And I grew up in the city of Livermore, California, which is the home of what's now Lawrence Livermore Laboratories, the home of the nuclear bomb. And growing up around a bunch of physicist kids, we definitely had a foretaste of what could happen. We were living in, I don't know, the shadow of nuclear war. So I kind of grew up with that mindset, and it definitely stuck.
It sure did. Final calls, Nelma in Pennellville, New York, east of the Rockies. Hey, Nelma.
Hey, George. Good music.
Thanks for calling. Sure thing.
I just don't understand, like, he says to put away food a year, two, 3 years. And some people, like, if they're laid off or unemployed, disabled, poor, live in apartments and stuff, I know it can be done, but from most of them, I think it'll be really hard. And like a lot of them I know, they can barely, like, you know, make it through the week.
No, sometimes. I understand.
You know, for even for people who are living paycheck to paycheck,
yeah.
There's a lot of things that you can do that cost hardly anything. For example, if you're just systematic about even if you don't even have a home computer, going to the library and using a library computer and watching FreeCycle and Craigslist every day, you can pick up a lot of things that people are just going to plain throw away that would be very practical. For gardening, things like gardening tools, jars for canning, you can get hundreds of canning jars free for the taking if you just watch those kind of bulletin board systems like FreeCycle and Craigslist. As I mentioned before, you can stock up on food very inexpensively. And by buying in bulk, you can use those same bulk foods on a regular basis, a day-to-day basis. Instead of buying rice in one-pound sacks, if you buy rice in a 50-pound sack
save a lot.
You're gonna be buying it at basically one-third of the cost of buying it in the small packages. So with that money you save, you can put that extra food away in the form of storage. And, of course, there's always the dollars to sweat ratio. If you're willing to put in the effort, you can get things squared away very inexpensively or just plain free. If you grow your own food, you're only out the cost of the gardening seed. And if you get involved in the Seed Savers Exchange, you can literally get free seeds just for the price of postage stamps. They'll be mailed to you free if you get involved in a swap by saving non-hybrid seeds, heirloom seeds, and trade them with other folks. There's a lot of different things that people can do on very, very low budgets.
I wonder, though, let's get back to that question we talked about, James. How many people actually believe something could happen?
Well, it's only a small portion have that recognition. The important thing is if someone listening to this right now does have that recognition, they need to get out of their armchair and get busy. You need to not just stock up, but you need to learn traditional skills. You need to practice those skills. You need to get into shape physically, because a life without the power grid and without gasoline is going to be a very strenuous life. You need to be in top physical condition.
You should do that anyway.
Yeah, and by the same token, you should wean yourself of things like tobacco, alcohol, caffeine. You need to get off of them now, because the last thing you want is to be going through withdrawal at the same time you're undergoing the enormous stress of a major disaster. That's just one too many stresses that could, you know, just cause an absolute psychological collapse. So you need to wean yourself of those addictions now, and you need to train with what you have. I've often been quoted as saying that owning a gun doesn't make anyone a shooter any more than owning a surfboard makes someone a surfer. You need to practice. You need to train. If you don't have the skills to go along with those tools, they're useless.
Let's go to Leo in Albuquerque, New Mexico next. Hi, Leo. Go ahead.
Yes, gentlemen. Thank you for taking my call. My question is, for example, in the event of an EMP attack, would a radio, for example, that's without batteries and just stored with, that's not hooked up to the grid, would that survive?
Most likely it would. It's mainly going to be in radios that are plugged into wall current or that have an antenna attached that will be affected by EMP, because the power lines leading to your house and the power cord leading to your radio, in effect, become an unintentional antenna.
Right, and that's what gets fried.
And that's what will fry your radio equipment. If you keep your radios unplugged and their antennas disconnected, they'll probably be fine. You can take an extra step and wrap your radios in a couple of alternating layers of plastic and aluminum foil, and that will create what's called a Faraday shield around them. But that extra step probably won't even be necessary unless you're very close in a major EMP area. And if you're in that field strength of EMP, you're probably also in the blast radius of a nuclear weapon, and you'll have much bigger problems to worry about than your electronics not working.
James, do you think government is getting ready for exactly this?
Oh, they are.
Bringing
definitely.
Water, food, things yeah, like
if
that.
You, if you look at government purchasing, you've probably read all the recent articles about umpteen federal agencies that are stocking up on ammunition, even
yes.
the National Weather
Service. Social Security Administration.
Yeah. Huge orders for ammunition. There's substantial orders for foods being storage foods being placed right now. And I'm sure you've had a lot of guests on over the last few years that have talked about the fairly extensive underground bunker systems that have been developed, and not just places like, you know, NORAD in Colorado or Mount Weather. There's some fairly extensive systems that have been developed. In the Soviet Union, there's an entire mountain range that's been turned into a whole complex of bunkers. You can read about that in Wikipedia, for example. So, yes, governments are definitely planning ahead for this. I don't think they have any real conception of just how bad things could be just from an economic collapse, though.
No, I don't think so either.
I don't think they want to know. They thought through the full implications of a grid down situation. There won't be government if the grid goes down for several months.
Next up, we go to Priest River, Idaho. John's with us, first-time caller. Thanks, John. Go ahead.
Yeah, I moved from the Bay Area in 98. We've been prepping since then.
Good for you.
And we've got every caliber you need. I'm just thinking of a 338 Lapua for, you know, interdiction at a long range. But what I called is I got a diesel. I read one of your books. I like both your books. I'm going to get the next one. But I got a diesel Suburban, 6.5, same engine as in the Humvee. And runs on veg oil. I can also use PCBs, you know, from the power, the transformers on the power poles.
You can burn corn oil from the store, yep. cooking oil. You
Absolutely.
Can burn just about anything in that. Yes.
Yeah.
Really?
And straight
yeah.
alcohol too in that particular engine. The neat thing about that, I can use veg oil, strain it, and then just put it in there. Have heating pads and bottom heat up, and it gets cold up here. But
yeah,
I'll tell you a really fast, easy way to make a generator. You get an alternator. You get one of those stationary bikes with a big heavy wheel. You get a serpentine belt. You get a battery. There you go. You've got your a pedal generator.
You got to pedal away, but you can do it.
Yeah, but that you know I was down. I went 250 miles today on veg oil.
That's amazing.
Yeah, I love it.
That is amazing. How many? What's the mileage?
I've got a little hydrogen kit on there too, so I get about 25 miles a gallon.
Oh, that's pretty 70, good.
75. Yeah,
and if you're using scrounged cooking oil, your cost per mile
is free.
Is right in the middle of my price range.
Yeah,
John.
I noticed one of your books, you forgot to get a diesel, and the guys are coming from back east, and I'm like, oh yeah, I've been there, done that. I got a four-wheel drive diesel.
Yes, in addition to being able to use alternative fuels, I think if we are in a major economic crisis and there is any kind of central planning applied,
mm-hmm.
the refineries are going to be directed to have the highest priority on diesel because diesel is going to be needed to move trains and to move 18-wheel trucks.
And planes.
For JP4, yes.
Mm-hmm.
So diesel and JP4 are going to be at the top of the priority list, and we could literally see a situation where gasoline isn't available at gas stations, but diesel is.
Gasoline.
And that's why I recommend that people diversify and that they have at least one gas vehicle and one diesel vehicle and one electric vehicle.
Yeah, I got a J20 pickup. But the thing is, it's a mindset, too. This whole prep thing, you've got to get your mind wrapped around it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's the biggest thing. It's like,
yeah, the mindset is the crucial thing.
Yeah, people think we're, you know, a bunch of wing nuts. But that's okay. We left the Bay Area. So fine.
Yeah, but you'll be the first one they go to when they need something.
Well, they do because we got food prepped, and I'm a mechanic, and I fix all kinds of stuff, airplanes, car, you name it, I've fixed it. And all the tractors around here, they come get me to fix their tractors. That's a source of diesel right there.
Well, you know, Jim, I hope to God we don't have to use these things, but you got to be ready.
Absolutely. I think it's prudent for people to prepare. If they see the need to prepare, they don't take halfway measures. Get as well equipped and well trained as you possibly can with the time that we have available, and you and your children will be thankful that you took those steps.
What is the shelf life of ammo?
Oh, if you have ammo in sealed cans, it could literally last 100 years or more.
Or safe?
I have shot just recently some World War One ammunition, and every round,
wow,
bang. So now you can also have ammunition that's poorly stored, that's sitting around paint fumes or in a high moisture environment.
Or gets moist, yeah.
Where only half the rounds go bang. So it's important that you store it properly. If you can't find military ammo cans, and they are getting fairly scarce, one thing that works quite well is you can get empty, brand-new paint cans, one-gallon paint cans, from any paint store, because they're the same cans that they use when someone custom orders paint, and they'll take it out of five-gallon containers and put it in these one-gallon cans. They're quite inexpensive, and they're airtight. So all you have to do is pour in the ammunition. You may have to take it out of its original boxes to make it fit properly in a round can, but pour in the ammunition, throw in a couple of silica gel packets, and pound that lid down just like you would if you're sealing up paint, and you have just as airtight a can as a military surplus ammo can.
Okay, let's go to Los Angeles. Jim's turn. Jim, thank you for holding. Go ahead.
Hey, I don't mean to sound callous about it, but I think a little bit of what you guys are doing is projecting your own humanity on something that's not going to have any anymore when this happens. sorry. Out of breath. I've been working. But the long short of it is that I don't think, you can store beans, you can have ammo. Trading ammo, I think, is probably the dumbest thing in the world, only in that the minute you trade it, you're going to get shot with it and then get cleaned out. But I think the hardest part of this that nobody talks about is how to deal with that sweet family next door at day 10 that, their kids are starving to death and they're ready to cut your throat for a Snickers bar. Nobody talks about
this. Well, we did mention the unrest, Jimmy, if this hits.
I think that people should be very circumspect about talking about their preparations. And if you do let on that you have anything stored, you should never let the full quantity be discussed. You should,
No, that's a good point. You don't want them to know how much you have.
Right, and that's why it's important to have containers to dispense things in smaller. If you start handing out 5 gallon plastic buckets of food, people are going to catch on very quickly that you have large quantities available. You want to basically decant your grains into smaller containers like quart jars or half gallon jars and hand them out that way. In charity is very important, and I don't think that people should neglect charity, but people should, by the same token, be very quiet about their preparations. And when they do hand things out, it should probably be done at arm's length and preferably through an intermediary. I'm a Christian, and I like the concept of handing out charity through my local church. Deal with your church elders, not with your neighbors, so that they know what you have, but your neighbors will be the beneficiary of what you have and not even know that you have it. It's important that also from a biblical standpoint, the right hand isn't to know what the left hand is doing anyway. That way you won't be prideful of dispensing charity, and no one will feel personally beholden to you if they don't know where it came from.
It will be interesting times, James.
Yes, I think we are cursed to interesting times, and people need to be ready to hunker down. They need to team up with like-minded people, and they have to be prayerful. You need to get right with God first and pray that you will be in the right place at the right time with the right people, because unless we can count on divine providence, I don't think we're going to get through this.
Let's go to Boise, Idaho. Max, it's your turn. Go ahead, Max.
Hey, Jim, great show tonight. I got a rather unusual question. I got laid off about a year ago, and I got way behind on my credit cards, and I'm trying to fight for my life to pay them, not getting anywhere with them, and my credit's already been pretty much decimated. I'm renting. I don't own anything. My car's paid off, and I'm contemplating just instead of trying to salvage this thing and pay these cards and they're not going down or anything and just putting the money into food storage and stuff like that. You recommend that, or should I fight for my life to pay off?
Well, I think at this point you probably ought to go through bankruptcy. A lot of the bankruptcy protections have gone away, but there's still some very important ones that exist.
Right, but they have made it a little more favorable to the creditor these days.
Yes, they have. I do recommend that if you're that deep in debt, that you cut your losses and go ahead and declare bankruptcy. And the way that bankruptcy law is written, if you're using your vehicle as a if it's essential to earning a living, and if you live in a lightly populated area, it pretty much has to be because everyone has to commute by vehicle. There aren't bus systems, and it's too far to ride a bike to get to most jobs in rural areas. So they're not going to take your car away under current bankruptcy law. So in your case, I think it's probably best to go ahead and declare bankruptcy and press on.
Well, sooner than later, my friend, I think. What do you think?
Well, I think that we're definitely going to see some severe...
A lot of signs out there.
...traumatic economic times here in the very near future, possibly as soon as this fall. Things don't look good. If you look at what's going on in Europe and you extrapolate from there, and if you look at their debt level versus ours, it's not that much of a different situation. The only country really that's even worse would be Japan. They have huge debts there, but it's not very well publicized.
Well, we shall see what unfolds. James, I want to thank you for being with us for these couple hours. Very important subject. Up next, we are going to be talking about 11 days in May. What does that mean? Stick around as we talk about subconscious potentials.